Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all of this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. You think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers. That they probably will never, ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk, and welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. We're extremely, extremely thankful that y'all could join us here again for another week, for another edition of AI. Tonight, we're doing something a little different. I was talking to the folks that have joined me here so far about how crazy busy that my schedule has been. Ryan and Lance, they've been covered up with just life and responsibilities and all those things too. So it's been a little bit of a grind. So to try something new in the middle of all this, it's a little overwhelming, but I think we got the right group around to be able to make this thing really, really awesome. But before we dive in to the awesome sauce that this episode is probably going to bring, you know what we like to do? When we get a five-star review, we like to read that out loud. When we get a little love, we like to show a little love. So this one comes from, oh goodness, this comes from Nick. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. C-Z-Y-Z-E-W-S. So Nick Chizuz. That's, I don't know. We ain't got a clue. This Appalachian tongue don't stretch that far. But this is from, we'll say just Nick. This is from Nick from Great Britain. That says another great show discussing interesting subjects. 5 stars. I heard you guys on the confessionals. As a person who believes in manifestation and the power of energy, and it really does work, I really appreciated your Bruce Lee quote. I am Scottish, Irish, Polish. My spiritual beliefs and my appreciation of nature run deep through my Celtic and Baltic roots. My granny read tea leaves. I've had a life of paranormal experiences. And I also pray to Archangel Michael. I study all religions and believe they all have beauty and, more importantly, hope. People might label me a witch, but that's just because people need to put something they don't understand into a box. FYI, I accidentally said I wanted something bad to happen to someone, and it happened within minutes. That's when I realized the power of word. I never did that again. Be very careful what you wish for. Nick, peace sign emoji. So Nick, from over across the pond in Great Britain, we appreciate that 5-star review so much. It's pretty cool to know that we've got some listeners over in the UK that are still relating to some of the things that we're talking about and saying, because the things that we're talking about and saying, that's where it comes from. So thanks for that origin story that we get to sit here and speak about, UK. But no, this review, I really think is awesome because you shared your own little personal story. So I appreciate that as well. You know, I appreciate hearing about your heritage and about your background. And I love hearing about your granny reading tea leaves because, you know, around here at AI, we love some granny witching. So I appreciate that review. Sounds like you really understand and harness the power of the spoken word, as our good friend Ryan, co-host on this show, says all the time, life and the power of life and death is at the tip of the tongue. So Ryan's one of the great philosophers of our generation. And one of these days, all you hill folk and extended hill folk will come to understand that. But with you tonight, so far, I'm your only host, Justin. Lance should be around here at any time. And Ryan is on a trip down to South Carolina to take care of some matters. So if he's able to pop in, great. If not, sorry for all you Ryan fans out there. But I told you tonight we were doing something new. And that new thing that we're doing is we have a monthly Patreon powwow. And by that, I mean there's a tier on our Patreon called the sibling tier. You know, you can become a brother or sister of the kinfolk of AI. And on that tier, we do a monthly powwow, what we call it. We send out a Zoom link to all the members on that tier. And then at the end, you know, sometime within the last week, couple weeks of the month, you know, we just jump on here one night and we sit down and we just start discussing the weird. We've done this once before and it turned out so well that we were kind of like, you know what? Let's just record the next one. Let's sit down, record it, and put it out as an episode. Because I mean, the stuff that we're talking about with the good, kind folks that, you know, support us, well, they can't be supporting us unless they're kind of into the same kind of things that we are. And what I've found out really quickly in this whole podcasting game is your listeners out there, they know a whole lot more than you do about a whole lot of different stuff. So when we humble ourselves, number one, and just start listening with an open ear and then realize, man, these would make some for some great conversations. That's what we do. So tonight we have, so far, hopefully we get a couple more coming on here as we go. We have Kenneth and Joel and Maynard. He just jumped off of here for a second. I don't know what happened there. Hopefully he jumps back in here. But we have those three guys that are, again, they're brothers on the sibling kinfolk tier of over on Patreon, which if you're interested to go check out, you can check that out over at patreon.com/Appalachian_intelligence. But that's who we have with us tonight. Kenneth, Joel, Maynard, hopefully he gets back. But how are you boys doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I mean, it's a Saturday night. I got my cooking in for the night. Got me a couple of Iowa Waters, better known as Bush Light. You know, just kind of kicking back.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, we're excited to have you, man. I know that's, again, like we talked about before we started recording, like I just mentioned a little bit there. You know, this is it's something new kind of for all of us. You know, this is new for us. It's kind of new for you guys. Joel's kind of the savvy veteran of the AI interview process. And Maynard's back with us. So, Maynard.
Yep, sorry about that.
No, you're good, brother. You're good. How you feeling this evening?
Not too bad, other than the little tech gremlins got me there for a minute, but that happens.
Yeah, you got to watch those tech gremlins. They'll jump in a whole lot. We went on and recorded with the Strange Road Boys, Mikey and Bub, and we were supposed to start talking about our Swift Silver Mine exploration and the rock carvings and all that different stuff. And almost an hour and a half in, we still hadn't even made it to it. It was just paranormal experiences and different weird stuff going on. So that's just kind of how it happens sometimes. But I say all that to say the tech gremlins hit us pretty hard. And those dudes are professionals. So, Joel, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing good. Sorry for being in and out. You notice the surroundings are different. I'm building a studio in the downstairs of my house, and I had a guy coming by to look at some repairs I need done. So that's what I was doing.
Well, that's awesome. That's really cool. You're way farther ahead in your studio stuff than I am. So that's huge.
Yeah. pretty exciting.
I love when I have the kinfolk coming on here and they're more professional than I am. That's what I love. Well, fellas, I'm excited for this tonight. You know, again, I want to apologize for this being such short notice. I know, like I was telling y'all before we got started, things have been really, really crazy schedule-wise. But I'm really excited about this. And I know that I'd put out probably a week or so ago for you guys to be thinking of your own weird topics and stuff that you wanted to bring to the table. So I thought the best way to probably do this would be to ask each of you individually just kind of what you've been looking into, what you've been working on. And this is also your opportunity, because I know before I started podcasting and actually talking to people on a regular basis, there's not a whole lot of people in your everyday life that you could talk to a lot of this stuff about. So a lot of times it was me sitting here researching and beating my head against the wall and talking to people that have no idea what I'm even talking about, or if they do, they don't care to even kind of bounce these ideas off of. So hopefully this is an opportunity for all of us here tonight to bounce some of these ideas and some of these thoughts off of each other and just kind of see what comes back, you know? So we'll just start. Maynard, we'll start with you, brother. What kind of stuff you've been working on, researching, looking into?
I'm kind of a Bigfoot guy. I mean, I'm interested in the whole, all the topics, but Bigfoot's always kind of been my bread and butter. But I was just wondering, last 7 or 8 years, Bigfoot in Appalachia has become like a big topic. It's always, you know, when I was growing up, it was always the Pacific Northwest, Skunk Ape maybe, Falk Monster. But, you know, last 7 or 8 years, it's been Kentucky, Tennessee, Southern Ohio, down where you guys are. And I was just wondering, like, how much of that is the internet, or how much of it's just people are more willing to talk about it now, do you think? Like, growing up there, I mean, was there anything in the Appalachian culture that you had stories of, like, the wood boogers, or was it something that, you know, your granddad would talk to you about when you're hunting or anything like that? Or is it just something that's really just about in the last 7 or 8 years, you know, as people got more into the internet?
Well, that's actually a great question, but I think that it's something that you can attribute to both of those things. You know, now, especially being in this field, we're constantly getting Bigfoot stories from that are dozens and dozens, sometimes hundreds of years old, from people that were local to this area, or, you know, lived in kind of the surrounding area. So it's one of those things. I mean, obviously we have the ability of the internet at our fingertips right now. You know, we have the capability to find all this stuff just at the push of a button. So there's so much information and so many stories that are coming out. But I was always a kid that was really, really into the weird. You know, I loved it until I had some experiences that traumatized me for a while, and I turned away from everything until eventually the prodigal son returned back to the weird. But when I was younger, when I was a kid, my mama would tell me, you know, she would talk about boogers coming. If you ain't good, a booger's going to come get you. If you ain't minding your manners, the boogers are going to come get you. I mean, I didn't know what she was talking about. I mean, I knew what Bigfoot was. I knew what Sasquatch was. I mean, I watched Monster Quest religiously. It's one of my favorite shows ever. So, you know, all the way up through my teenage years, she would talk about these boogers, but I never had a clue what she was talking about until I really started looking into Bigfoot in our area. And one day it clicked. She was talking about wood boogers, dude. Like, she was literally talking about, hey, if you ain't good, Bigfoot's going to come down here and get you. So, you know, it was one of those things that clicked for me. And then you start hearing a bunch of these old timers, you know, telling all these different stories. My dad has a story about seeing, he won't commit to calling it a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or a wood booger or whatever other name you want to put on it. But he tells me a story that he's looking out the window of this place that he was visiting one day, and it's literally like 3 miles up the road from where I am right now. And this man that he said looks like he's wearing this giant dark cloak, but it wasn't really a cloak, comes out of the tree line, probably, I don't know, probably 150, 200 yards away, something like that. So it was a great distance. But he comes out of the tree line, he walks across that power line right away, and he leans his hand up against a power pole there. So Dad's looking and he's thinking, you know, the whole time that he's looking and seeing this, he's thinking, that has got to be a huge dude. Like, this is gigantic in comparison to this power pole. So he goes back, does a little recon afterwards, and when he shows back up there, he says where this thing's hand was, because he got a kind of a good idea of where it was at from his vantage point. When he gets there, he said this thing has to be 9 or 10 feet tall. Has to be. So he said, unless there's just Manute Bowl plus another dude standing on top of his shoulders walking out of the tree line, I don't know what else to call it. So, you know, it's one of these things that I think you can attribute both of those things to this area, because you hear a lot about a lot of people in the Bigfoot community, these early on researchers, it was always Pacific Northwest. That's all you ever heard was Pac Northwest. I mean, that was it. But with the explosion of the internet and with all the information that's coming out, I think it didn't take too long for us to all realize, no, these stories are coming from everywhere. Like, people have seen these things not only all over the country, but all over the world. And I've heard stories that apparently they don't have to have a whole lot of woods to operate in to be there. So, I mean, you have like a Bigfoot hiding out in the one little Central Park area of the suburbs. I don't know where they're going, but you hear these stories. So, I mean, that's a great question, Maynard. But I think you can attribute to both of those to make that a really, really long answer.
Does that make you think it's more supernatural rather than a physical creature? The fact, I mean, if you're talking physical creature, you're going to have a breeding population and everything. When you start hearing stories, you know, that are maybe not as much area as you would think, does that make you personally think more supernatural? Or what do you think about that?
Well, Lance has some great, great, great theories on the whole kind of, I like to call it the Bigfoot frequency. And I know that's out there in other places, but Lance's ideas on it are pretty original. And like I just talked about with, we done an interview with Shane from the Inquiries of Our Reality podcast the other day. And we kind of got into this topic. You know, my idea on Bigfoot and what he is changes from day to day. Today I might wake up thinking, yeah, this is probably a flesh and blood creature who is just biologically gifted with all these different traits and capabilities to camouflage himself and make himself, you know, naked to the human eye in certain situations, and, you know, all these different things. And then other days I wake up and be like, nope, this sucker's straight interdimensional. Has to be. He's popping in and out of portals. Got to be. Footprints were here. Now they're not. There's lights everywhere. This dude is. So, honestly, my opinion on it changes from day to day. But Lance, let them hear your opinion on man, what you think.
I have been, I've never been a big, huge Bigfoot guy. Just in general. Like, I've always known, of course, the lore and the stories, and have always enjoyed cryptid stories. Like, growing up, my favorite monster was Loch Ness. Like, I was obsessed with the Loch Ness monster growing up as a kid. Would consume and read everything I could possibly read about the Loch Ness monster. When I was 11 years old, I had a full-on trip planned to get there, and I was going to go myself and pay for my own plane ticket. And my dad just kind of laughed at me like I was a crazy person. Like, I'm not sending an 11-year-old across the pond. So that was my favorite monster. I was called a monster growing up. And can spit facts to this day about Loch Ness. I knew Bigfoot, read a lot of stuff about Bigfoot, had conversations obviously about Bigfoot, but never really got into the Bigfoot lore or the Bigfoot conversation
really until probably a year or so before I jumped on the podcast with the boys. It was just from having another conversation with another one of my buddies, who was a big Bigfoot guy. And for the longest time, I just simply thought that it's an awesome story to talk about. Yeah, it's fun to think about. But much like Loch Ness or Mothman or any other cryptid, it was just a fun story, and there's no actually basis to really any of it. And then the more evidence I've seen and more stories that I've heard, the more I've been in this realm of crazy here for the last year and a half, the more I've learned and read and researched, I guess, about Bigfoot. And I've come to the conclusion that he's 100% a physical being, and that this will change at some point, I'm sure. But where I'm at right now is that it's 100% an original. It's just an animal that's there, like a deer or a bear or anything else. And I know we hear all of the paranormal things that happen around Bigfoot sightings, or about Bigfoot experiences, I like to call them sometimes. I think a lot of that is just, we could probably chalk it up to the human psyche and remembering or subconsciously, once we recall, or Pete, not me, because I never had an experience, but once people recall Bigfoot experiences, they've heard so much of these paranormal lures that they kind of liken some of those same things, like that they're not making it up, but subconsciously they're just kind of juxtaposing their own inferences on what should have happened because they had the Bigfoot experience. Now, I think right now, personally, and if boys have listened to the show, I know that you have. I think the reason we don't see the Bigfoot in nature is that we aren't able to visualize. We don't see on their spectrum. So there's a trait that they have. There's a fat layer. There's something in their fur, whatever the case may be, that we just aren't, eyes, our irises and cones just can't perceive that UV length, that the UV rate they put out. I don't think that the cloaking mechanism they turn on and off, that's too paranormally for me. But if a evolutionary trait they have developed, or just simply a trait that God gave them back when he created them way back when, or that scientists gave them when they made them in the lab, whatever the case may have been, or the Nephilim gave them however you think they got here. I think they have an inherent trait in them that we just simply don't see on their wavelength, right? I've said this several times now on this podcast and other podcasts we've done as well. People are colorblind. They can't see certain colors because of the way their eyes operate. I think it's the same concept, just on the flip for Bigfoot. They have an ability that I think most of the time we don't see them in the wood. They're probably there. We just can't see them because they're really well camouflaged, much like a chameleon, much like a certain aquatic animals do. I think Bigfoot has very much kind of the same possibilities, and it has the same capabilities within its repertoire of ways in which it keeps from being seen. And when we get a chance, and one of the next episodes we're going to be doing, I jumped on here a little bit late and heard JK talking Bigfoot stuff. I've got an awesome Bigfoot story from our area that I have heard, and it's a really good one. And as a matter of fact, you've heard us allude to the Woodburger on here several times. I've actually got the story on why the people that the very first account of a Bigfoot in our area. I've got it, and there's some places around our area that are named after the event. I didn't know this until about a month or so ago, but there are some areas around, there's some locations where we're at that's named after this event that took place. And it's very well documented. So the next chance when we do one of our episodes, I'm so excited. I've been waiting to tell the story. Because much, you know, go back to me being a Loch Ness Monster guy. What Bigfoot sightings that I did read about or see, it was always West Coast, right? It was always the Pacific Northwest, like Justin said. We just didn't hear that much around here. But realistically,
I'm going to say that Big Feet were here in Appalachia before they're anywhere else. And that this is kind of the generation point of the northern and central America Bigfoot, all the different names it has. I'm under the impression that they all generated from the Appalachian Mountains when it was all together. That it's just kind of where they started. And yeah, that's one of the reasons why, and one of the reasons why they're so good at hiding everywhere else, because they learned how to do it here. That's my impression. That's my, now that's going to change. I don't think I'll ever fall into the realm of it being a interdimensional entity that has paranormal taste to it and only gives you chills up and down your sixth sense because there's so much paranormal activity going on around Bigfoot. I don't think that's the case. I think with most cryptids, that is the case because they have been generated from evil places. But I think with Bigfoot, just because there's just so, like, yeah, there's Mothman stuff. Yeah, there's Chupacabra stuff. Yeah, there's other, we could go on Wendigo stuff. Yeah, there's all these other cryptids, but none of those cryptids have the backlog of sightings and information that Bigfoot does. And I think that's the reason why Bigfoot is an actual physical entity, a real animal like a deer or a bear that we just have the inability to see or comprehend what they can do. That was a long answer. Sorry, man. That was a long answer for that. That could have been probably wrapped up in 2 seconds, but that's why we're podcasters, I guess.
No, I like it. I'm pretty much along the same lines. I think a couple of it, like you mentioned, as humans, our eyes are trained for motion. So if Bigfoot have been around us long enough to know, if they just stand still, we're not going to see them most of the time. If they're in a well shaded place and they just stand still, I think a lot of times we'll walk right by them. I've seen that.
We're also not very perceptive. If it's not, like you said, if it's not moving right in front of our friggin' faces, like, we don't see it. We're just not good. Even people who are in our area who spend some serious time in the woods, who are, oh, I'd say, better at seeing things just kind of out because they're into it more. We're just sometimes just not real smart. Like, we just don't see stuff.
Smell us a mile away too.
Exactly. Right. I just know from deer hunting, like if you're downwind of a buck, he ain't coming. He ain't coming close enough. Once he smells you, there's no way. You imagine how much better a Bigfoot can smell than, you know, just a regular deer can smell. There's no, and the noise we make too, they can hear. There's just no way they're going to purposely see us or show up to us, right? It just doesn't happen. And I think too, like I mentioned this the other day, anytime you see a Bigfoot sighting, like it's always them, a video of them going through a cross, right? An opening in the woods. Like there's always like a couple of trees or an area where there's an opening most of the time. And you see that Bigfoot walking through that opening. You never really get a very good Bigfoot video, or none of them are very good, but like you never really get a really good one of them just being in the woods somewhere. Right? It's always them walking in an opening. That also kind of leads to why I think that they just have there's something in their fur or something that we can't perceive or can't see.
Yeah, I also think, like, you know, when you're out deer hunting, when I remember when I first started deer hunting as a kid, sometimes I'd have trouble seeing deer until I know what to look for. I just don't think, even unless maybe if you've seen one, I mean, if you're out in the woods, even if you're looking for Bigfoot, I don't think your eyes are trained for something that's 8 foot tall with 4 foot wide shoulders. It's just outside of your frame of reference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's something you're not looking for. I mean, like you're talking about, when you're going deer hunting, you're looking for deer. You know what a deer looks like. When you're coon hunting, you're looking up in the top of the trees for those beady eyes. You're looking for coons. I mean, when you're squirrel hunting, you know what a squirrel looks like. You're looking, you know where to look and what you're looking for. With these big feet, you're not thinking about, or at least the vast majority of the population is not looking for big feet. They just kind of happen to stumble upon them sometimes, and it always leads to a really weird encounter.
There's lots of animals in the woods that probably you never see. Even when you're deer hunting.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Unless they want to be seen.
Yep. You're 1,000% right on that. I mean, I would like to know just how many I mean, just think about it. You know, we hear all the accounts, all the encounters and the stories that come from around here. I mean, it's got its own little local name. You hear, again, all the old folks kind of talking about their stories with Bigfoot and all this different stuff. Like, I've often wondered, how many times have I been out hunting or hiking or four-wheeling, especially when I'm just booking it through these four-wheeler trails through the woods? How many of these have I passed by and been, you know, probably really close to and just never knew? Never knew.
Well, then you take into the accounts where, I don't know if you guys have heard these, where, you know, Sasquatch are big. They see them and they have twigs and leaves like braided or stuck like a ghillie suit, where they can just like disappear. And then you have other theories that talk about infrasound, where maybe they've developed the ability to use infrasound to not only cause that sixth sense to happen, but to distort what you see.
Yeah,
just enough where it's a little blurry. You know, the Christmas cutout line isn't quite there because of this infrasound. And then with this ghillie suit thing they've done with their fur, you can't really make them out. They just blend. And for a bioform like that, who has progressed and has learned how to live in the forest like that, I mean, that's completely understandable that it would know how to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think that goes back to one of those things. I mean, we know that there's animals out there that have the ability to use infrasound. We know that there's animals out there that can, I don't want to call it cloaking, but look at chameleons. I mean, they can turn whatever color to as their surroundings. There's a lot of marine animals that can go completely translucent. You know, you can pick up a certain kind of jellyfish or stingray and they'll go completely translucent as to not be detected. So you have all of these animals that are already out there, you know, within these ecosystems naturally that have evolved, you know, whether it predator or prey, have evolved to either survive or to be able to be the apex hunter that they can possibly be. So if we're dealing with something that's just incredibly smart, incredibly intelligent, I mean, I literally watched a video the other day of a couple orangutans. A 2-year-old little boy had dropped his bottle down in this little, it looked like a moat. It was like around the cage, around the enclosure, I guess is what we're supposed to call it. Not a cage, it's an enclosure. Dropped his bottle down there and its bottle was floating around in the water. Well, this orangutan goes over and grabs this long piece of, it looked like a paper bag, like a cardboard, less thin cardboard paper looking bag, and wet the end of it and made a loop in the end of it and kept throwing this brown paper out there in the water, not to reach the bottle, but to start stirring the water just enough that the current of that water from where it was stirring it would cause that bottle to come right up to the fence. Well, it came right up to the fence of that cage. The orangutan just reached out, got it, and started drinking this bottle. So, I mean, we know we can watch videos of orangutans that have the ability to not only use tools, but to make their own tools, to be smart enough to not reach the bottle, but to cause the environment around the bottle to move closer to itself, to be able to get it. And the orangutan didn't need that bottle. It just wanted it. It didn't have anything to do with a necessity. It just wanted it. So if orangutan in a zoo is that smart, is that intelligent, imagine what something like a Bigfoot, you know, that is, have been around for God only knows how long, that have stayed totally out of sight, well, not out of sight, but out of evidence of humankind, they have to be extremely intelligent. So I don't know, man. It's just, we know that there's animals out there that are on par and can do things that took science years and years and years and years to figure out why and where it was coming from. You know, I'm sure people back in Asia and Africa in, you know, 1,000, 2,000 years ago, when a tiger roar would they let off this infrasound, it would hit them like a ton of bricks. They probably thought, holy crap, this tiger, there's something, this is a demon tiger. You know, there's something spiritual about this thing. It almost knocked me off my feet with just a roar. You know, what's going on? Well, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I'm sure the first person that held up one of these stingrays and it disappeared in their hand probably thought, holy crap, this is witchcraft. Something's hexed this animal. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things that the more information that comes in, the more that we're able to look at these different encounters and just kind of see where it all goes and adds. It's interesting. It's interesting for sure.
Like with the orangutan, I mean, him wanting to get the bottle to drink it, not to give it to the kid. That's the ability to reason. And that's one of the things that separates us from animals is the ability to reason. You know, two dogs don't reason over the food. They fight over the food. You know, they don't, Okay, I'll eat half, you eat half. And, you know, if a Bigfoot can reason, then they're just as smart as we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And another thing that's got me thinking lately, see what you think about this. I was reading a hunting magazine, and there was kind of a conversation, kind of an argument over whether or not deer, other animals are able to see you if you're staring at it, that they have the sense that, you know, if you're just sitting and staring at a deer lining it up, that it actually gets that sense of, uh-oh, there's something wrong. And I mean, I totally believe that. I mean, even as people, I think it's not as inclined as we are, we could still have that sense. Mm-hmm. So I think it has to have that sense. And if among smell and everything else, just another weapon in its arsenal, it's got to know that if we're out there looking and they think that, we think we see it, they probably shut down and they know they're as far away from that as they can get. But I know even in hunting, they're talking about even deer being able to sense that. And deer aren't like the smartest animals in the woods. They can be elusive, but they're not, you know, they're not exactly intelligent. But even they sense that, you know, being stared at.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally nothing more terrifying than it being 3 o'clock in the morning. You feel just the presence of somebody staring at you, face like on top of you, staring at you right in your eyes while you sleep. To wake up to see a small child just looking at you, crawling to your bed, is the most terrifying thing in the world. It happens to me so often right now. To roll over and there's people just staring at me. Hey, what are you doing? I'm trying to sleep, honey. Go to bed. But you're right though. Like, I don't wake up for anything. Like, right, I don't. I'm a heavy, heavy. I don't sleep much. I don't need a lot of sleep, but I'm a heavy sleeper. So when I'm down, I'm down. But even anytime the girls are in the bed with us and are awake looking at me, I wake up because I feel the presence of them staring at me. Right. And I think we've all experienced at least, you know, you've been in the Walmart or whatever, at the local, whatever, at the gas store, your gas station, getting whatever to eat, like, and somebody's staring at you, you always feel them staring at you before you see them staring at you, right? I think it's a kind of just an innate ability that we have. I think you're 100% right on that Bigfoot can do the exact, if we're thinking about Bigfoot or Big Feet are able to do these things that they're able to do, you know, move around in the woods very quietly, keep out of sight from us as humans. They're intelligent enough to do that. They obviously have the ability and the intelligence and the attention span to know that someone's looking at them. And how to counter that as well. If something like a deer can do it, like you said, I actually didn't know that. It was actually interesting that you said that. It's a thing I'm going to put in the back of the old brain there for later on. I didn't realize that even those animals had the ability to do that. It makes sense, especially kind of looking back on some of the experiences I've had in the woods now while doing some hunting. I didn't know that was a thing, though. But if they have the ability, then you know good and well that something like a Bigfoot has the ability to do that too, which makes things more difficult.
I didn't realize either until I read an article and it was kind of an argument of whether or not they can do it. And I'm like, I don't see why not, but I really hadn't thought about it, you know, at all until I read that article.
Yeah, it makes sense. It really, there's been several times I've been kind of, you know, waiting for one to kind of come to a cross and then just like, for whatever reason, what in the world happened? How did they know I was here? The wind wasn't blowing, like I was covered. I didn't move. And obviously, then they popped up and looked at me and then been gone before I had a chance to release the string. But it's, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
even as a kid, when I was playing with the woods with other kids, playing hide and seek or whatever, even if I thought someone saw me, the two things I just had instinctually, I guess, knew. I'm like, don't move a muscle and don't stare at them. And that's just something that I always, and I usually, people, you think people are staring at you, and next thing you know, they're walking away and they just never saw you. Like, huh.
Well, what have we all done as a kid? Boogeyman's been outside, right? Outside of our bedroom as a kid. Listen, I'm under these covers. Like, I would go covers, pillow, extra cover, and then another pillow on top, right? That's how I used to roll when I was little, to keep the boogeyman away. But our thought, even as a kid, right? If he can't see me, or if I can't see him, then he can't see me, right? That's a very common thought that we have from a very small age. So, and there has to be some, and that's obviously intuition, right? That's mental intuition that we have. It's an instinct that we're born with that's there for a reason. If we're just a mammal, which we are, if we have that instinct born in us, you know, the other mammals have to have the same thing as well.
Well, you think about it. If you play hide and seek with a small child, I remember one of the first times that Connor, you know, my oldest now, and, you know, I was a super, super young dad. I mean, I'd spend some time around small kids, you know, cousins and all this stuff. But, you know, obviously not the amount of time as you're going to spend with a child as a parent. So I remember when he got big enough to start playing hide and seek, and, you know, he understood what it was and how we were going to play. And I started counting. As soon as I got done counting, said, ready or not, here I come, and opened my eyes. He's standing about 10 feet in front of me with his hands over his eyes, totally covered up, not moving, because he thought, well, I can't see him, so he can't see me. So it's almost like, you know, you guys are talking about, it's almost like something instinctively that we're born with that we know, well, if I'm really, really still and I avert my eyes, then I'm not going to be seen. So that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, it kind of gets into the psychological aspect of everything, but that's super interesting. Joel, I think you had something to say on the topic a little earlier, didn't you?
Yeah. I believe Maynard was asking about, you know, stories that have been told in the Appalachia about Bigfoot or whatever. My father always had a story he would tell us when we'd go camping. And I don't remember the story exactly, but I remember it scared the shit out of me and I would cry and Mom would yell at him and just, you know, but he'd always tell a story of a creature called Old Pete. And the story got started when he was a kid. And they made this creature up to keep kids out of the moonshine stills. That there was something named Old Pete, whatever. Stay away from these part of the woods. Old Pete will get you. And it just kept getting passed on and passed on. Well, at some point when my dad was a little older, in those woods, someone got attacked by an animal and got their whole back ripped up. Probably a cougar or something, if they're even here in Georgia, who knows. But I always thought that was interesting because every story has to start with some facts somewhere, I'm sure.
And cougars are in Georgia, Phil. Joe. They're in Georgia. You just got to walk to Walmart and find them. There's all kinds of them walking around down there.
Yeah. I get my dose of culture every time I go to the Walmart on Mansell Road. I come out of there. I swear I come out of there a racist sometimes. But yeah, I've always heard about Bigfoot in Georgia. But people talk about them up in North Georgia. I mean, the North Georgia mountains that's where everybody's moving to. I mean, it is getting crowded up there. I mean, it's just, you know, if they're up there, they're going to be seen more and more here soon because you have all these giant equestrian neighborhoods up there and just, it's the place to live. South Georgia, you get down in the swamps down there. I could see where a Bigfoot could live and not be seen for a long, long time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Probably dog man.
Probably dog man.
I'm throwing my bone at dog man. Literally, if I saw one, I'd have to throw a bone and run like crazy. Get it, boy. Get it.
There's another.
I got special dog man and rake ammo for my gun. So I see one. They're dying.
Yes.
There's another cryptid that I had no concept of until I started doing this. Like, I guess I knew like werewolves and all that kind of stuff. Like, I knew that lore, but I didn't know there was such accounts and so much information behind people experiencing and seeing and being around these or having these dog man experiences. That's a whole different or brand new avenue, or I guess rabbit hole of pathology that I had no concept of.
It's a dog man hole, not a rabbit hole, Lance. We're not talking about rabbit man. We're not talking about bunny man, right, which actually is a thing. I read a story about bunny man the other day, but we're pretty sure that he was just a whacked out, like, psychotic. We're almost positive. And by we,
dog man on me.
Yeah, me and my research team, which is also me. So,
and me, you bounce things off me.
Well, yeah,
you
yeah.
You
got to
get that guy on the head on the confessionals we were talking about last time.
Dude, that guy and his story, you talking about the old retired policeman?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Holy crap, man. That was
I believed every word.
I did too. That's what I told Ryan that very day whenever he started talking and telling all this different stuff. I was like, look, there's a lot of people. Now, obviously, I am never, ever, ever going to debate anybody that comes on this show. I am never, ever, ever going to say, nah, I don't believe what you're saying. We're going to have to cut this off here. You got to go. You got to bounce. We're literally creating a platform so people can come on and share their stories. So obviously I'm never going to do that, but that's not saying that there's not people, especially on other shows that I'm listening to. And I'm like, nah, now you kind of contradicted that with what you said there. And that's kind of getting a little bit out. I mean, there's some other people that I've listened to and been like, nah, they're full of it. Good story. Really good story, but they're full of it.
I've got to the point now where if I don't believe it, I just turn it off. I guess I've listened to so much of this stuff, and like I'm quicker to believe things than not believe things, right? I mean, especially the more I'm in this space, I'm quicker to believe because some of this stuff you just can't make up. The story that was on the confessionals about the guy that went out to the Bonnaroo fire or whatever, like festival when I can't remember what episode it was, but like when he was telling that story, I was like, there's no way you can make this up. Like there's too many details that he was recalling. Like what does this benefit him to make this story up, right? Like so I'm more quicker to believe things than I'm not. Like when I'm out on something, I'll just turn it off. I can't, yeah. Like, this is just too much. Like, there's no way this is real. There's too many facts that aren't just matching up, and I'm done with it.
And that story, did you ever see the pictures that Tony put on his Instagram?
Yeah, it was
not.
He had receipts.
There's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what he walked into, because just looking at some of these pictures of people that were involved, I was I was cringing. I was like, yeah,
it was a creepy one.
God, yeah, that's nuts. That's nuts. Well, Joe, what kind of stuff have you been looking into here recently? I know that you were talking about some different things on the Discord today, which is also another thing we want to put out there for the Hill folk. Hey, jump on over on our Discord, hang out with the AI guys, but also hang out with these dudes here. I promise you, they're in there a whole lot more than we are, talking and chatting it up and doing a whole. We try to drop in as much as possible. But there's some awesome conversations going in there.
That is a party all the time. You all need to get in on the Discord.
Yeah.
Good food picks too.
Absolutely. If nothing else, there's good recipes and food picks that show up in there. That's enough to get anybody to get involved.
Joel had me starved to death the other day, son, sharing all those food pictures, everything he was making. I was like, oh my gosh. I was lit. No joke. I looked at my wife and I was like, can we afford a trip like straight down to Georgia and back right now? I mean, just quick trip there.
Pick me and Hay up on the way. Let's go. Yeah.
Just hire you a chef, and I just go on all your, you know, your little silver ventures.
There we go.
You know,
I'm making a call right now, Justin. First order of business, once we find the silver, we're bringing Joe up north for him. bringing him in our area, he becomes the full-time chef.
Absolutely. Our full-time chef.
Absolutely.
And then where he goes, going to get to the point, he's like, I ain't fixing nothing for you idiots. There's ramen noodles in the pantry. Go make your own meal. I just came here to talk weird stuff. But Joe.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. You're good.
I was talking about the, I've always wanted to kayak the Etowah, and there's a put in and a take out where it goes through the Dawson Wildlife Management Area, which I've talked about before, where they did the nuclear powered airplane engines. But where the Amicaloa and Etowah meet was an old Cherokee holdout when they were rounding them up for the Trail of Tears. And I would really like to go and just check the area out, take a metal detector. I don't want to camp right there because it's going to happen if I do. But I mean, you could do the whole trip in one day, but I'd like to split it up, you know, camp, go check the place out, because the place is actually not too far from the takeout. But I think it would be a lot of fun. You can see some of the places that have been cemented in from the river. And there's some old buildings that are just, I don't know what they were, houses or something, that are just standing there on the side of the river. But I just think it'd be really, really cool. It'd be cool to document, come back on the show and talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be awesome.
I just need people to go with me because I'm a big scaredy cat.
Well, now I don't think that has anything to do with just being a scaredy cat. I think that's just smart. I mean, you see so many of these missing 411 cases. You see so many of these just, you know, they don't want to document it a whole lot or talk about it a whole lot, but you know, just the Appalachian Trail, for instance. I mean, there's people that are going missing along the Appalachian Trail, you know, every couple of years. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those things, dude, like being out in the woods, being in nature. That's, you know, I love it. I love to be there. I love spending my time there. And I'm a person that I don't necessarily like to be alone because my mind just starts going crazy. And if there's one person in this world that I can't stand to spend time with, it's me. that's a problem.
Your own worst enemy.
I'm my own worst enemy. But yeah, I think that's just smart. I mean, because you know, you do see it, you see people all the time. So
speaking of the Appalachian Trail, have you ever met someone who's hiked the whole thing?
I've never met anyone that has.
Know people who have, like I know of people that have done that, obviously. I've never personally met anybody that's been on the whole thing.
Because they come out different when they're done.
I'm sure.
Especially if you know the person. Like from start, if they do the whole thing, they are just a whole different person.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know, it's one of those things, man. It's like, well, number one, it's a huge commitment. Like you're saying, I'm going to take this many months out of my life and I'm roughing it, you know, because you're not hiking the Appalachian Trail in a hike through pulling your camper behind you. There's no way you're going to be able to afford to walk into a town and rent a room every single night. You know, you're pretty much just, you're taking the bare necessities along with you. You're living off of jerky and protein bars and trail mix. I mean, water filling up your canister when you get to a nice spring. Or if you're like me and have a Life Straw bottle, not a sponsor, but could be Life Straw. If you're listening, my bottle will filter 1,000 gallons of water. I could technically pee in that bottle and then drink it, and it would be totally filtered. Life Straw, drink your own pee. Careful.
I have one in my bag.
There you go.
Got to have in your pack.
There's a place here in Georgia. It's a prepping store, and they have a big sign outside. And it says something like a gallon of water weighs however much. What's your plan to move it? Something like that, you know?
Yeah, you mean moving.
I forget. Yeah.
That's why you got to have a Life Straw.
Life Straw.
So you can drink your own pee responsibly. That was a better word than carefully. I need to cut that last one. Responsibly.
I knew a guy who jogged the Appalachian Trail every 2 years. He's doing it this year.
He's a crazy person.
What?
He's built. I mean, his legs are like, I mean, just muscle. His whole body's muscle. But that's what he does. What is he? He is 36 right now. He's done it, I want to say, 7 times.
Holy crap.
He does it. He takes 2 years and he works, saves up money, and then he jogs it. Jogs it, runs it. He still camps. He does everything everyone else does. He takes a little extra money. So I guess when he hits these towns, he's got to have plenty of food, plenty of protein. He can't just live off some grits and eggs.
Yeah. But
that's his gig, man. That's what he does.
It doesn't sound like any fun to me at all.
Me neither.
No.
Me neither. But he's a chef. That's what he does. You know, he works in food service right now. He's working at the Amicaloa Lodge up in North Georgia.
I knew all you chefs were a little crazy.
They're weird people, man. Weird people, especially pastry chefs.
So anything else you've been looking into, Joel? Any kind of research that's up on the front of your brain right now?
That and Fort Mountain.
Oh, dude, Fort Mountain. That's a Courtney, whole episode. Actually, we did an episode.
I think, what's her name? Courtney says she drove through it. Autumn Courtney says she drove through it the other day, but didn't go in, just drove the road that goes over it. Said it was really foggy.
Yeah.
But I've been up there a couple of times. That's interesting. I'd like to go up there with the mindset I have now and really check it out. But just all the stuff that's close by, you know, that Dawson Wildlife Management area is just a weird place.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got to be some stories coming from there, but it's just hard to dig that stuff up.
Well, that's the main thing, man. That's what we like to encourage, you know, everybody to do is look in your own backyard. You know, you don't have to take these hours long trips. You don't have to take a plane or a boat over to Europe to see history. Like, you can find it in your own backyard. We did. And all it took was talking to people. I mean, that's all it takes.
Yeah. There was something I mentioned, and now I remember. I told Merritt, we were talking about Somerville, Georgia. And I told her on there that something weird happened to me up there. And I'll talk about it on here. I just remembered.
Yes.
When I used to deliver auto body parts, I think my dream started with me delivering, and it was down in Mobile, and I had the sleep paralysis. But one of my routes was North Georgia. And this was before cell phones, internet. Before all that. And I broke down, and it was right outside of Somerville, and I broke down on Highway 136. Now, there's two Highway 136s. There's one, but there's kind of two. There's 136, and then it merges with another highway. Then it goes back to 136. So I just was a long way from the store, anything, miles. And I just waited for a police officer to pull over. Then several people stopped, and I told them what was wrong and gave them my company card, said call. They said, okay, we'll do it. And nothing happened. Police officer, same thing, nothing. And finally, about, 9, 10 o'clock at night, another police officer pulls up and says, we've got somebody coming to tow you back. And I was like, thank God. I mean, I was getting scared. I was just stuck up there in the mountains. Nobody, nothing, dirt road. Come to find out, they were looking for me. They were just on the wrong Highway 136. So I'm waiting for this record to show, and this old record, like, had to be from the 50s, pulls up, just painted like silver, gray, whatever. Old man comes out, says, you the one I'm towing? I'm like, yes, sir. Goes, all right, where are you going? And I said, Norcross, Georgia. And he's like, where's that? And I said, it's the other side of Atlanta. He goes, I've never been to Atlanta before. I said, all right. And so he's hooking me up, and a couple other people stop by and just checking on me, I guess. I guess that was the biggest thing to happen in that area in a long time. And one guy's like, oh, you're going with the Gray Ghost, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, all right, well, have fun. And so he gets me towed down there, and I give him my company info so he can build a company, because when I got dropped off, everything was closed. It was probably almost 1 in the morning. And when I went back to work the next day, they were like, who towed you in? And I said, this guy. I gave him a card, and they said, yeah, we saw that. We called, and there's no answer. No one's replying. No one's picking up the phone. It rings, but that's it. And they said, do you remember the name? I said, no. He was referred to as the Gray Ghost. They were like, well, if he calls us, we'll send him a bill or we'll send him the money. But, and so I was, and I cannot remember hardly anything about that trip other than being hooked up to the tow truck, hitting 285. So I remember he was like, oh, I've never, man, how many lanes are on this? You know, I'm like, oh, six. And he's like, what do y'all need six lanes for? And then getting to work and him dropping me off and me getting in my truck and going home. And I don't remember like conversation we had. So I know we had to have talked because it was a good 3-hour trip. And that just jogged my memory. I forgot all about that until she brought up Somerville, Georgia. And so
wow.
David Allan Coe song, you know, I don't know. Was,
that is wow.
And I feel like I've heard that name, the Gray Ghost, before somewhere else.
The Gray Ghost. Well, did they ever get a bill from anybody?
Not while I was working there. No one ever contacted them. And I gave the guy who was driving my business card and the paperwork I keep on me in case something like that happens. And,
wow, that is,
yeah,
that's extremely interesting. It's almost just like somebody showed you. It's almost like you had an angel watching over you. You just showed up when you needed it the most and said, well, this angel just happened to drive a tow truck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane. Where exactly did you say this happened?
It's on Highway 136. It's in North Georgia. It's right outside of Somerville. Now, I want to say that Highway 136 is now just one road. It doesn't merge into another one and then pick back up again. And, you know, now there may be freaking neighborhoods or, you know, spa resorts or wineries. But at the time, there was nothing. I've driven the route many times and I knew where I was, that I was several miles from a store or anything. And no cell phone, nothing like that then.
That's really interesting. That's a really Gray Ghost Hunting Plantation in Georgia. Connors Mill Road, Mark, Georgia.
Never heard of Mark, Georgia.
Does that ring a bell at all?
It's probably in South Georgia if it's hunting, quail hunting, dove hunting, something like that.
I don't know. There's a couple places, you know, that have the name of the Gray Ghost. But for that matter, my dad had a gray F-150 a few years back that he called the Gray Ghost. So that could be anything, you know.
He'd say, no, my dad had a Chevy Custom 10 that he bought in 1972, the year I was born, and my sister wrecked it. And a buddy of my dad's bought it and fixed it up and painted it what was called Ghost Gray.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he hooked that truck up, man.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
My truck.
That's really interesting, man. That's a weird story. That's one of those that, you know, is it or was it 100% paranormal or supernatural? You know, who knows? Maybe it may have totally just been something on the regular that just don't have much of a memory of, you know, as far as conversation wise or ride wise. It's one of those spaces that you look back in your memories and you're like, I don't really know. I don't know what that was. I don't know what happened. And if nothing else, I mean, it just leads to really good stories and question. I mean, that's interesting. That's pretty good.
I've got, you know, speaking of that, and I bet everyone has these stories where you did something that you don't remember, but your family probably talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. One of the ones was, I was 2 or 3 years old, a couple of days before I was going to have my tonsils taken out, and it was December. And my parents heard all this banging around and they came out, and I was standing right in front of the Christmas tree with one of those little Braves baseball bats. And I'd broken every ornament as far as I could reach on that tree. Glass everywhere, not a cut on me, standing right in the middle of it.
Holy and crap.
The other one, my sister was babysitting me. And I wanted to sit on the couch and eat cereal and wear my Superman or something costume from Halloween. And she was like, no, you need to go to bed. and my mom smoked. This was back in the 70s, and I picked up one of these big brass ashtrays my mom had and just whacked my sister right over the head. Mom and dad come home. I'm sitting on the couch just eating Cheerios, watching cartoons. Andrea's laying on the floor, bleeding by the head. Don't remember any of it.
Well, on Dexter, I think we'd call that a dark passenger. Not trying to make any kind of insinuations at all, Joel, or anything, but I don't know. I mean, a chef serial killer would be a really cool show.
Yeah. I can fund that soon.
But yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting story. You know, Fort Mountain down there where you're at, it's awesome. Just the stories and the legends that surround that place. Cause you know, you look at the legends of the Moon-Eyed People and the stories that come along with those, you know, they say that's where they were driven away from by the Cherokee tribes that drove them away to take, you know, if you listen to some of the legends or read about some of the legends, you know, there's a lot of lore about this war between the Cherokee and the Moon-Eyed People. And that was kind of the starting point, you know, instead of the shot heard around the world, I guess it was a tomahawk heard around the world or whatever to drive them out. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. Well, Kenneth, I know you've been digging into some research, and I know that because we're planning a one-on-one interview at some point. So I'll say this. Don't share too much because we got to have it for a one-on-one time. But, well, I guess three-on-one, you know. I don't know what you call a menage with four people. A menage quad. Would it be a qual? Just a gangbang. Big AI gangbang.
Just a good time. It's a good time.
AI sausage fest gangbang. But yeah, what's some stuff that you've been that's fresh in your mind that you've been looking into, want to bounce off some of these guys?
So I guess there's a couple things I've been looking into. One of them is like real in depth, and I kind of talked to you about that, so I probably won't really go into that. But the other one is the CCRU, the Cybernetic Culture Research Unit. And just to kind of set it up, I had no idea about this. And then when Hollow Sky was doing all the egress stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I was like diving deep into it. I was running numbers, all binary and the hexadecimal and all that. And I just got fed up and said, I told Steve, I'm like, I'm done with this, dude. It's killing me. And then like 2 days later, I just happened to type it in and I came across the book called Egress that was written about a guy named Mark Fisher. His friends wrote it about him after he committed suicide. So I started looking into it. And I know we don't like using synchronicity. So we'll just say there were some holler flags.
Yes.
There were some holler flags, right? He had a book called The Weird and Eerie, where he's talking about Kubrick, Philip K. Dick, Lovecraft, and all the weird and eerie science fiction style thing that's going on. And then he gave a definition of it, where the weird is the existence of something that should not exist. The eerie is either the presence of something that should not be present, or the absence of something that should not be absent. So when it comes to the eerie, I always just try to tell people, like, phone booth. Like, there was a point in time where not seeing a phone booth was eerie. Now, if you see a phone booth, it's eerie because it shouldn't be there. Nobody needs it, right? So I just started, like, doing this deep dive into him, and that's when it came into the CCRU, which – for Nick, the man from the top of the hour, Warwick University in England is where they were. They started in 1995, right? And it's all kinds of crazy dealing with like the internet, like back when, I mean, this is 95. This is when it was really taken off. And it was like this weird joining of philosophy and technology. And then I delved a little more into it, and they got like way out there. Like the university will tell you that this group never existed. It was never there yet. All the people who are alive that were there were like, no, it existed. So they ended up getting a house in the town where Aleister Crowley was born. That's documented. Now, I've heard that it's actually the house he was born in. I haven't actually been able to find true documentation of that. But they found, and I'll show you guys, and people won't be able to, you know, that is what they found, the diagram. They call it the Lumerian diagram.
Like Lumerian? Numogram.
Like Lumeria, like Mu.
Okay.
Right? And so they talk about an entity that spoke through Nick Land and Mark Fisher. Mark Fisher was also known as K-Punk. He did tons in the blog. When, like, back when people were just starting to blog, he was just pumping them out like it was crazy. And Pandemonium with the demons and time sorcery and hyperstition. And it's like crazy. So the numogram is very similar to like the Tree of Life in Kabbalah, how it has the zones 1 through 10. Except the numogram goes 0 through 9, right? And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, why would they change? Why would it be changed to that? And then, kind of notice something like 3, 6, 9. You know, 9 is in certain forms is the triple harmonic 3, 3, 3, and kind of wish Lance was still here since he's the teacher and all that. But the other funny thing is that all multiples of 9 digitally reduced to 9. 9 is 9, 18 is 9, 27 is 9, 30, they all digitally reduced to 9. So it's like the omega, you know, and 0 is always going to be 0. And they start getting into like just weird, crazy things. Like they call it hyperstition. The example they use is the Necronomicon, right, by Lovecraft. He made it up. Yet it became such a held belief that it was created in the universe and sent back into time because that's what people willed, basically.
So kind of like a time-jumping tulpa.
Basically, it's like this weird tulpa thing you can create. And this is the book I showed you guys earlier. It's called Time Sorcery. And this guy, he goes, like, they have it. They have a website, the CCRU website, even though they're not really active anymore, where they go through all the demons, their names, all this crazy stuff. Like, it was blowing my mind. That's why I've been doing it for, like, 2 years. Just because, like, every so often, I got to be like, whoa.
So what was the point or the, I guess, the company mission statement? Like, what were they saying that they were doing these things for? If it was a combination of psychology and, you know, technology, you know, what was their mission behind looking into a lot of these, you know, like you said, a lot of the Crowley-esque stuff, the occult stuff, the Lovecraftian, the hyperstition? What was the point behind all of that?
Well, their point behind it was just expanding intellectuality through it, but as well as manifesting the universe how you need it to be manifested. But then it also comes down, so like I said, there's some way out there people. They believe in a thing called accelerationism, which, like, when they say it, they mean like capitalism as it's practiced is doomed to fail. So they want to accelerate that and make it fail.
Right.
You know, and dude, it's hard to like talk about on the surface so much, but it's just these guys came up with some of the craziest things you could ever think of. And then they basically, so it started out at the university under a woman, Susan, I can't remember her last name. And then she slowly went away, and Nick Land and Mark Fisher kind of came in control. And they were doing like expos where it was writings and music, and it was all focused on the weird and the eerie and the occult. And the funny thing, so Warwick University at one point in time worked with pretty much every government in the world under IMF. Like just the secure transfer of money and emails and all that. And like Mark Fisher has gone out there and just and say he committed suicide. He's written numerous books, but like when all this research was going on with Egress was when I was like, you know, some of this stuff's kind of weird, especially the way things are going now. Like the Utah monument that popped up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's weird and eerie. And, and the other thing that, so Mark Fisher specifically states the weird and the eerie are the only modes to egress the human conditioning. They are the only way to step outside of what's going on and realize what's going on.
So then you have a group named Egress that our boys Kyle and Steve get involved with. They start posting up these dream flyers. I think probably looking for a specific person or specific people just in a community. And every question on there is literally just questions about the weird and eerie. You know, do you have these weird dreams? Do you have a fascination with mirrors and caves? Do you hear voices that you know don't belong to anybody around you? You know, all these weird and eerie questions. You know, almost that's interesting. It makes me wonder, like, if you have a company, an organization like this, and they're putting in all the work. And look, we know, all of us sitting here, we know there's a ton of organizations, corporations, government entities. We know there's a ton of them out there that study the occult religiously, because whether you're for it or against it, whether you think that it's just manipulating energy or if it's dark, dark stuff, we know based on historical evidence, it works. I mean, it just does. It works. Now, I have my own thought process as to what's behind that making it work, but we know that it works. So if you have a, you know, you hear individuals all the time that are saying, well, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. I manifested it. You know, this is what I've manifested to happen. So, yeah, I knew it was going to happen. You know, you hear a lot of celebrities talking like that. You hear we just had a not a hometown boy, but he's really, really, really local. Just won the slam dunk contest the other night. Mac McClung, just a little white boy from Gate City, Virginia. You know, just about a little over an hour away from us. Goes out and wins the slam dunk contest. Well, they ask him, you know, when he wins it, did you ever think that you would be here? And one of the first words out of his mouth was, absolutely. Yeah, I manifested this into reality. So, you know, it's one of those things people do and say it and use the language because they know that it works. You know, you can. So if you have an entire organizational entity that are all looking into these things, or not all, I won't say all, but you have a core group of people that are looking into these things, and it's like evidence-based practices. It's EBP. If you use it and you do it and you see that it works, my question is, where else would you start implementing that? You know, is that why we've seen such a rise in what I would call Luciferian, satanic imagery and symbolism in a bunch of the live broadcasts that are performed on cable and satellite television? I mean, look at the Grammys this year. Good God almighty. I mean, there ain't even no way to try to get away from that. You can't even say, oh, no, we meant. No, you meant exactly what you did. I mean, you wouldn't even.
Well, yeah, and that's where you get the holler flags, right? So the internet itself has actually been around since like the 50s and 60s.
Right, yeah.
With the military. And then you have a group where the majority of them came from a different university, this university, and they do this cybernetic culture, basically all about this cybernetic culture that we have now. And they develop into this occult thing, right? Which is, I just find it kind of funny that's how it happens. Like, I know everyone talks about AI or whatever and something in the internet. Well, kind of funny that these people do nothing about, you know, this is what they're about. And they go here, they go to the occult.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got Crowley, who, I mean, I've read that he was basically a spy or whatever at one point in time, you know.
Well, government's working like for crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it wouldn't be much to believe that governments were using the CCRU.
No, yeah, for sure. And it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder how many of these organizations are out there that we don't know about. You know, how many egresses are there out there that branched off from this initial ideology or the initial work of this organization? You know, how many different ones branched off and are trying, you know, they're using the human population as guinea pigs, as test subjects to run their little games or experiments or, you know, whatever, just to see what kind of results, you know, they're getting from it. I honestly believe that the worst thing that could have happened to Egress Industries did. And that's Kyle and Steve getting involved, asking the questions, jumping in, and then going on these really big platforms and start putting it out there. And when you had so many people hearing about this certain thing, I mean, what happens all with these top secret projects that go on in the government? And I'm not saying necessarily that it was government or that it was, I believe that personally, I believe that it had ties to some form of alphabet agency. But what happens with all these top secret projects? When people start asking questions and finding out about them, we just move right down the hall. We give them a new director and we name it something different. And we just keep on doing it. So I feel like, you know, it's one of those things that who knows how many of these organizations are out there? Who knows how many people, you know, look even back at things like the Montauk Project. You've got so many, well, adults now, you know, older people now that are coming out and saying, hey, I was one of these Montauk boys. Like, they came and picked me up. They took me to this place. They ran these experiments. They did all these different things, totally MK-Ultra'd and brainwashed and you know, tried all this, you know, different stuff. And a lot of cases, you know, families knew about it, according to some of these reports. It was, you know, they would come and tell mom and dad that they were going to take them for these, you know, it's the same spiel as right now. Oh, we're going to give them a really good education. We're going to teach them this and that, train them up. It's going to be like a intellectual boot camp. When the whole time they're MK Ultra and the crap out of them, they're brainwashing them. They're turning them into winter soldiers, if you want to look at it along those lines, and just using them to see what kind of psychological abilities that they can get from them. So you have these organizations out there that are doing these things all the time. But I think that was I think what you're seeing in the transition there is the next step from going and kidnapping people, basically, and bringing them in to run these experiments to, well, no, we'll just put this information out there and we'll let the people willingly come to us. All they got to do is pick up a phone and call a number.
Well, yeah. And then, so, like, I'm doing a lot of, like, trying to, since they bring Crowley up in the CCRU, and they speak of the entity that's behind it all, like Crowley did, I was kind of, like, trying to side by side. And so you have, what, Jack Parsons?
Yep.
The Scientology guy, I can't think of his name.
L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard, you got these guys who were strict followers of Crowley.
Yeah.
Who have created a religion that's in quite a bit of trouble right now. And then, like, you know, Jet Propulsion, JPL, you know, the Propulsion Laboratory, that were followers of Crowley that were doing these rituals. And then you have another group that comes around roughly 100 years later. I mean, they technically dissolved in 2003, but there's people who are now getting into it. Like, this guy is, like, doing Black Mirror scrying to speak to Pandemonium.
Yeah.
And all this crazy stuff. And, I mean, there's rules that it all has to add to 9. So it's 0 and 9, 1 and 8, 7 and 2, 4 and 5, 3 and 6. And it's like 3 and 6 is a standalone because 6 minus 3 is 3. 9 minus 0 is 9, so that's a standalone. So there's really just one time circuit. And it's like, where are these people at that are following this? You know, where could they be? Because we already know that probably his followers have pretty much infiltrated every aspect of society.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Jack Parsons. He was doing rocket propulsion for NASA. And also, I might add, had his hands in owning a few coal mines that are pretty local to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird tie-in to the whole everything's weird in Appalachia story. Jack Parsons got his got his name on some partial ownership of some old school coal mines. But no, man, even just talking about the numerology, like everything that you're talking about here is practiced by certain sects and people within the occult, you know? Like, you, numerology is huge within the occult. I know the Thelemites, you know, what Crowley, I think they greeted each other with, what number was it, 47 or something? They thought that
something like
47 was the perfect number. Maybe four. I can't remember the exact number, but it was, you know, it was a lot of the nine squares that they used. They would use everything for, like, numerology. And even look at, like, Alan Greenfield, you know, watch Hellier. Look at Alan Greenfield's secret cipher of the Euphonauts.
Yep, I got that.
It's all based on, you know, all of this numerology stuff, all of this code, all of this different stuff that was used big time by Crowley. You know, Alan Greenfield himself used to be a Thelemite follower of Crowley. He's not anymore. I don't think so. You know, at least he says that he's not. But, you know, that's how they would greet each other, is with that number, just with that number, because it was thought to be the purest number, or to mean, you know, certain things, which is cool in the show. It also means Hellier. So that's pretty cool.
I think it's 31.
Is it 31?
Yeah, love and will.
Where did I get 47? Maynard, where did I get 47? Where did I pull that from?
I'm pretty sure it's 31. I could be wrong, but I have a shirt with it on, so I'm pretty sure.
It's probably 31. Mm-hmm. Maynard's a practicer of Thelema. He's just letting us know right now.
Pretty far from it.
Next month, he's going to jump on here and just say 31.
He's a Thelematic Mason.
Yeah. But no, it is all weird, man. And that's one of those rabbit holes that as you dive down, you just keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And be careful with it too, man, because not only for your own mental health, and it's like you're beating your head against the wall trying to figure out, you know, the shadowy entities that are behind and running all this different stuff, when you're not going to find them. I mean, you may find out how they operate and what they're doing and what they might lead to, and but just be careful with what you're doing, because anytime you start looking into anything with organizational power,
it looks back.
It definitely looks back.
It looks back. Yeah.
It definitely looks back.
Like I said, I've been dealing with it for like 2 years. I bounced because I have like the Keys of Solomon and I have all of Crowley's books and Greenfeld's and all that, and then the stuff I have from the CCRU. So when it's getting a little too much, I bounce over to something else. Like I put it in the Discord, which if you're not on the Discord, get on the Discord. Love it. Did you look up the Axis of Evil?
Did you look
that up?
I saw that you'd posted that, but I haven't gotten around to checking that out yet.
Okay, so this is just it's a thing I'm kind of working on. It goes with the other stuff I'm working on, but so I can't remember what year exactly. So they sent some instrumentation up in space, and they wanted to map the cosmic microwave background. It's called the cosmic microwave background map. And there's an axis. What would be the entire universe, there's an axis. And our galaxy, our solar system is right in the middle of this axis. And they're like, this shouldn't be here. For everything that we know, Big Bang, all that, this should not be here. So they reconfigure instrumentation, send it up. Still there. Reconfigure instrumentation, send it up again the third time, and it was still there. Now, all axes that they find on this are within 8 degrees of this axis of evil. So, like, I look at it, and when people say, like, why would aliens come here? Well, if they were doing a cosmic microwave background map, and this is true, then there would be something very specific about the axis that runs directly through our solar system.
That's weird.
It's really weird. And then, so being my faith and all that, I would sit there and say, well, if creation were to start, as said in the Bible, then an axis would be where everything began, which would basically be right where we are.
Right. Yeah. But why the name Axis of Evil?
Because they say it shouldn't exist.
So
according to the scientists, that axis should not be, it shouldn't exist like that, because we're not important. Why would we be, in essence, the center of a universe when we're not? So the axis should not be there. And since they can't fully describe it, they just call it the Axis of Evil and go on their way.
So they just put the term evil onto
it
just in case it gives closer evidence for the biblical creation theory. That way you can drive enough people away from that and say, well, that's evil. So let's stay as far away from that as possible.
I mean, basically, it's that look. It's they're looking back at me like, all the theories we have say this should not be here, but it's here. 3 different times. And even though we send better equipment up every time, it's still here. It's evil. It shouldn't exist.
Well, that's definitely interesting. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I like that. See, Kenneth, this stuff that you're diving into, this is all mind-blowing, melt your brain, really hurt my head after just a few minutes of looking into. That's why I just try that's why I just try to stick with my treasure in the cryptids. Like, that's way easier on me. Way easier. But that's why I love doing what I'm doing, because I just get boys like you around and say, hey, come on here and talk about all this weird stuff that you're breaking your brains with. That way I don't have to do it. I can just hear about it. I don't have to do all that heavy lifting.
I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. Like, so I have family down in North Carolina, brothers and sister, and then, you know, obviously uncles and all that. So they're more towards the coast, but I mean, we have family that's up in Appalachia.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's part of like, after, you know, the transferring from listening to Hollow Sky and you guys were on there and you know, transfer back over, it's like, I want to hear these stories about local Appalachia.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we've got, man, we've got a good episode coming. Holy crap. It's going to be a banger. You know, Lance was just telling you a little bit earlier about the origination of the wood booger and the first initial encounters here in Appalachia, what was reported, but that's tied into an article that I received from a listener a few weeks back. And then that ties into other things. It's going to be a banger. I can't wait for that one to come out and drop, for us to be able to sit down and have the chance to talk about all the strings and everything in that one. It's going to be a good one. But yeah, we all got ties back. We're all hill folk at heart. That's why when we just made the name Hill Folk, it don't matter where you are. It don't matter where you are in the world. You're hill folk at heart, baby.
There's a hill. Well, that's also why I like. There's always a hill somewhere. That's kind of why I like that other theory I'm working on. That it starts off with the axis of evil a little bit, like Lance, because of his thoughts on the Nephilim and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want him to be there.
Yeah,
and of course Ryan. I mean, I feel like I should pop an edible just. Just because he's not here, just you know, in memory or whatever. But yeah, like, because that's the thing. Like, I really want the input on that stuff.
Yeah,
some of that. I've tried to type it out in Discord, but there's so much that goes on with it. It's really hard to type out and talk about.
Just save all that stuff. Just save all that for.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Kenneth Bailey interview on AI, and we're gonna get crazy weird with the axis of evil and alien entities. It's going to get nuts. So
it might have been some of the
entities that come and stole Joel and took him up and started teaching him how to levitate. Bunch of weirdos.
Yep.
Might
find them again, ask some questions.
Yeah.
I don't want to find them again for my experience. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, boys, before we bring this thing down to a close, we're knocking on almost 2 hours now, I think. Well, I know it was a few minutes we got started, but by the time we wrap this up, I'm sure it will be. But before we do close, before we head off out of here, first off, I want to thank you guys again for your support of this show, for your support of what we're doing. And not only, I'm not even just talking monetarily, financially, any of that stuff. I'm just talking about your time, man. Your time spent, your willingness to come on here and hang out and talk this stuff, because that means more to the show than anything else. Is y'all enjoying it, coming on and hanging out and talking with us, sharing it, pushing it, and just being about it. Like, that means more than signing up to pay a few bucks a month or whatever just because you love us so much. You know what I mean? Like, we appreciate the camaraderie more than the financial side of it. But, you know, obviously, again, just like we all talked, a couple of you out there, or I think Kenneth and Joel, you both are looking at possibly starting a podcast here in the near future. So, Hill Folk, when that comes about, be listening up, because we're going to be pushing like crazy. But that's always an it. I mean, that's what we all start this with the what if in mind. You know, what if someday I can do this full time? And we can't have that without people's willingness and it feeling heavy in their heart to donate a little bit and to try to help us succeed and to push forward and to keep moving. But off that soapbox, I just want to thank you guys for everything that you do. You know, we thank you financially. We thank you for your camaraderie. We thank you for your feedback and your advice. And we thank you for all the weirdness that you bring in stories and in the Discord and in personal messages. We appreciate you for all of that, because all of you here came on board pretty early on and you've helped push us as much as anybody else out there. So we appreciate you big time. But before we sign off out of here, any last thoughts, any final things that you guys want to deliver before we jump out of here?
I just want to thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. And thanks for creating this little corner of the internet. There's a lot of paranormal spots out there, but I think you guys do it a little differently and definitely have your own little niche. So thanks a lot.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Same here. Thanks. This is awesome. Hopefully we can get 6 people next time and 8 people after that. And, you know,
yeah, I was thinking
there was going to be more people today.
I was too. It was kind of last minute just because of how hectic our schedules have been. And we apologize for that. There's a lot of things I could get on here and apologize for right now, but we'll see. We'll save those for mostly the people screaming at me privately. But yeah, I mean, we enjoy what we're doing, man. And I thought that there may be a few more on this time around, but that we'll just keep doing it. It'll keep growing. People's schedules will line up eventually and we'll have, you know, 6, 8, 10 people jumping on here to bring the weird.
Yeah. I would just echo the comments of thank you. I mean, this little, kinfolk powwow. This is the second one. I'm loving them all. Discord. I mean, that's my number one social media app. Between Hollow Sky and here, like that's where I do all my social media, just because it's such a nice little comfy area of the paranormal to be in. It's everyone's so great on both Discords. I would say if you're not in that, get in that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, fellas, again, we appreciate you guys so much for jumping on here, hanging out with us. We appreciate your willingness to get on here and talk about some of the stuff you're looking at. And I think there was some stuff talked about tonight that not only were we super interested in, but I believe the Hill folk are going to be extremely interested in as well. And I love that we decided that we were just going to record this thing instead of just chopping it up, because this is going to make for a great episode, a great one. So again, thank you, boys. Thanks for jumping on here and hanging out with us. Hill folk, we appreciate you guys listening in and tuning in. Remember to follow us on all of our socials. Those will be all listed in the show notes, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The Discord, jump on over there, hang out with us. Patreon, if you do feel led to go check it out and what we have going on over there. I think we've been dropping, you know, like a couple bonus episodes, at least a month, you know, a couple a month. There's been a couple weeks that we've had like a early release to the episode for the patrons over there. Sometimes it's just me driving down the road and my thoughts on a recap of an episode that we did that the audio is probably not, you know, usual par and on quality, but that's some of the best stuff as you're going to get when I just have brain vomit, or either of us just have, you know, what's coming out right then. We got a lot of cool stuff going on over there. You can check it out at patreon.com/Appalachian_intelligence. There's 3 different tiers you can choose from on there. There's a sibling tier that you can check out that will allow you to come hang out this monthly powwow, to where we're probably going to start dropping a few of the episodes. So come on, hang out with us there. Hang out with us here. Go subscribe to our YouTube at Appalachian Intelligence. There's a lot of places now that you can find us, follow us. There's a lot of ways that you can support us. But more importantly, most importantly than anything else, just share the show. We're extremely blessed to have grown to the point that we are, or we have, in the last, you know, little bit over a year. And it's all because of you, Heel Folk. It's all because of these dudes right here and the rest of you out there that are willing to share the show and to say, hey, these boys over here in this little corner of Appalachia, they're idiots, but they're idiots that talk about a lot of cool stuff. So share the show. We appreciate that more than anything. Remember to go leave those 5-star ratings and reviews. We'll shout you out when we get around to them. We're a little bit behind, but that's a good problem to have. We appreciate that as well. We have some really good interviews coming up with a lot of really cool people. We're going to be on a lot of different shows out there, people that we've worked with before. We've got Cryptids of the Corn guys coming up that we're going to go on their show. We got our coon hunting boys coming back. We're going to do a swap cast with them. We got Eric from Uncomfortable coming back, or we're going to go on his show in about a month. You know, we just did an episode with Joel and Sean from Kill the Mockingbirds. We love those dudes. We're in the works behind the scenes, working on some stuff with Bo from the Bump podcast and Josh and Richie from what was formerly Sword and Staff. Broke my heart to see them in that, but I know they got a lot of things going on, and I know that they're still working on Shadow Appalachia, which is going to be amazing. And we have a really cool interview coming up with a lady by the name of Leah Noel. She has a podcast. It's a fictional audio podcast based in an alternate Appalachia. The name of this podcast is called The Innis Forgettins, INNISFORGETTANCE, The Innis Forgettins. And we kind of came in contact on social media the other day, or a couple weeks back, and she was kind of wanting just to swap promos to put them on each other's show. But I started listening to her show, and y'all, it's good. It's really good. She does all the writing, all the producing, all the voice acting, all the editing. She's a one-man show, or one-woman show, and it's excellent. So be sure, all you Heel Folk out there, be sure, go check out the podcast, The Innis Forgettins. Leave it a 5-star rating and review, and look forward to the interview that we have coming up with her in the next couple to few weeks, somewhere in that area. So with all that being said, fellas, love y'all. This has been a blast. Heel Folk, we love y'all too. And until next time, we'll see y'all later.